At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to Next on the Tee with Chris Mascaro, the show where you get the inside access to the best minds in the game. Each week, Chris has the privilege of chatting with top instructors, legendary players, course architects, and industry insiders. If you're looking to improve your game, gain a new perspective, or just hear some incredible golf stories, you are indeed in the right place.
You see, Chris, let me tell you something. I haven't spoken to a press man in my life that is knowledgeable, seriously, as you are. Never.
You do such a great job. It kind of makes me feel good all of a sudden.
You do so much for the game. You're so kind to all of us that are out there in the game. You know, we need more people like you in the game of golf.
Thank you for pressing play. Now, grab your clubs, step up to the tee, and let's get started. This is Next on the Tee.
Hi, folks, and welcome into this week's edition of Next on the Tee, where golf legends live and your game gets better. I'm your host, Chris Mascaro, and this week's show is going to be a lot of fun. I think this might be one that you're going to want to go back to and listen to a couple of times because the guys I have with me this week are a ton of fun. Plus, they've got some mental game techniques and product technology that I think you're going to want to be a part of. And it all starts with Joe Bosco. Now, Joe was a PGA professional, came highly recommended to me by Jeff Smith. You guys know Jeff from his great show, Those Weekend Golf Guys. He's joined me on the show several times. Plus, he's one of the most sought-after PGA professionals in the country. And look, when Jeff reaches out to me and says, you need to have this guy on the show, well, then I need to have that guy on the show. He said, Joe is great. Now, he's not someone you want to give your car keys to. Plus, he's got a cast-iron stomach. But as a swing and mental performance coach, he's amazing. And he was spot on. Joe is also a hypnotherapist. And since the taping of this episode, I've gone through a session with Joe to help me with the pain and the recovery from my ankle replacement surgery, which has taken a little longer than I wanted it to. I'll update you on the results of all of that after a few episodes. So stay tuned. I'll catch you up on all of that. But look, Joe is also a short game guru. So there's so much to get into tonight. I was so excited to have him. We only scratched the tip of the iceberg of all the stuff that I want to talk to with Joe. We'll get him back on the show again soon. But look, we talk about going through some of the scoring irons, right, and how we can do a better job with those things and all of the things that I've mentioned to this point. It's a jam-packed segment, so you're going to love Joe. He joins me here in just a few minutes. Following him, our good friend and 1989 Champion Golfer of the Year, Mark Calcavecchia, returns. You guys know how much I love Calc and his wife, Brenda. This time around, we learned about the Christmas card that he and Brenda sent out with a picture of a streaker from the Open on the cover. We learned what the through line is and how J.C. Snead taught him and me by extension not only what it is, but not to walk in it. Mark tells the story of taking out his frustrations once on a water cooler, which he sent tumbling down the cart path, ending up nearly hitting his mom. Then we look back to the 2000 Open and the practice rounds that he played that year with Tiger Woods, plus his wins at the 1993 and 95 Argentine Open. And we finish up learning why Mark thinks that All in the Family and Green Acres are two of the most underrated shows of all time. And I think he's right, by the way. Then I hope you'll come back for part two, because we are joined then by the CEO of Proto Concept Golf, Marcy Komodo. Marcy is just a wonderful individual. I'll get into that more in a minute. But we'll talk about the clubs that they design there at Proto Concept. They have been on the Golf Digest hot list several times. They've got a new line of wedges coming out that I'm dying to try. One of the many things that's impressive about their manufacturing process is they use a 3D CAD technology, and they don't sample one or two out of 10, 20, 50 heads of their wedges, irons, and drivers for quality and tolerances. They inspect every single one of them. So we go through each of their clubs to learn what sets them apart. It's amazing stuff, folks, and I know that you're really going to enjoy learning about their process and designs. Plus, like I said, Marcy is just a wonderful, upbeat, positive guy. I think you're going to enjoy hearing the enthusiasm and passion in his voice and for what he does. So, folks, a lot of great stories and insights coming your way this week here on Next on the Tee. And as always, thank you so much for tuning in and taking the journey with me. Okay, but before we get into this week's show, I want to start off by giving a shout out to our good friends over at the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. TribLive.com is the leading news website for Western Pennsylvania with news around the clock. Pittsburgh pro sports coverage, a high school sports network, a podcast network, which you can find Next on the Tee on. So go out and bookmark TribLive.com or download the TribLive app for free and stay up to date with all the news in Western Pennsylvania and this show. I also want to talk about our friends over at the Pittsburgh Brewing Company and Iron City Beer, a brand that I have loved my whole life and started drinking when I was 21 years old, of course. Whether you're a hacker or a scratcher, the secret to a successful day on the links is knowing when it's time to grab an iron, even if that means keeping it in the bag till the 19th hole. If it's been a while since you've reached for Pittsburgh staple beer, it's time to revisit Iron City. Thanks to their incredible new facility in Creighton, the best tasting Iron City beer ever made is now available at a course near you. Iron City pairs well with any lie and sky and serves as a friendly reminder that there's always next round. Iron City beer, best enjoyed while enjoying life. And folks, this year, get ready to experience the game like you've never experienced it before at the Keep. It's the brand new Bill Bergen and Reese Jones co-designed course up at Macklemore. Nestled high atop Lookout Mountain, the Keep offers breathtaking vistas that are even more spectacular in person than they are in the pictures and the videos. With its challenging layout and awe-inspiring views, every round there is an unforgettable adventure. Whether you're taking on the signature holes or just soaking in the scenery, the Keep is where your best golf meets nature's finest backdrop. So grab your clubs and join us up at Macklemore this year. The Keep is open for preview play and it's waiting for you. But you gotta hurry now because spots and availability are filling up fast. So don't wait. Check out both courses, the Highlands and the Keep, for yourself online at themacklemore.com. And then do yourself and your buddies, or yourself and your family a solid by getting your spot reserved now. And experience distance and forgiveness all at once with the new QI35 driver from TaylorMade. QI35 is designed to give golfers more distance from more of the face while maintaining maximized forgiveness through high MOI designs. Whether you're looking for low spin and maximum workability or easy launch and plenty of adjustability, it's available in low spin, core, and max models. QI35 also has a full assortment of fairway woods and rescues to deliver distance and forgiveness throughout the top end of your bag. Check them all out online at TaylorMadeGolf.com. Okay, now making his Next on the Tee debut with me is Joe Bosco. Joe came highly recommended to me by a mutual good friend of ours, Jeff Smith, and you guys know how great Jeff is. Much like he did with James Hong and Scott Monroe, if Jeff tells me, hey, this guy's going to be great, you need to have him on the show, this guy's going to be great and I need to have him on the show. So I was excited that Joe agreed to come on with me. Let me give you a little background on him. He earned his BA in History and Communications from the University of Illinois Champaign. He's been a head coach at North Shore Country Day School, had his own academy, Joe Bosco Real Golf, a little over 8 years back in Chicago. Since then, he has relocated to Charleston, South Carolina, where, along with being a mental performance coach and a hypnotherapist, he's also working with people like the U.S. Coast Guard, the College of Charleston's athletic department, some tour pros, helping them optimize their performances. He's also written a book called Real Golf, which we'll touch on as well, and I couldn't be more honored. He is with me this week here on Next on the Tee. Hey, Joe, thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me, Chris. Thanks for the intro.
So I got to start, Joe. I was talking with Jeff Smith. He was telling me about you and how great you are, which is something I'm very excited about. But he also tells me you have an iron stomach. Tell me about that.
An iron stomach. Well, I mean, I do enjoy eating and I like to eat a lot of different things. But I think he also might mention that he has to close his eyes. And so does James Hong when they're in the car and when I'm driving.
I wasn't going to bring that up, but he said that you're like a New York taxi driver.
That's right. Yeah, we had a fun time down at one of the teaching summits, the Top 100 Teacher Summits that we were all involved in several years ago, and I had to get us on time to something, and I met my tee time, so to speak. I got us there.
That's awesome. So, Joe, let's start out by going back to your early days, going from getting your degree in history and communications to being one of the top mental performance coaches and a hypnotherapist. How did that all get started?
Wow. Well, college. I was in a fraternity. We had a Las Vegas party every year, and we hired a stage hypnotist to come into the fraternity and do a show. And that was my first real brush with, I'll call it, the power of the mind. And I witnessed it with people that I knew very well and to this day. And some of the things that happened on that stage seemed like they were couldn't been real, but they were. And then that started me into a study of psychology and understanding that's never stopped. I hired one of the professors who did hypnotherapy to help me focus and concentrate for studying. And it really then hit home a few years later when I left school and left the world of real estate to start a golf academy with a head pro at the Winnetka Golf Club in the northern suburbs of Chicago. So prior to the academy that you alluded to earlier, I built the largest green grass golf academy in the Midwest. As Golf Magazine noted way back in the mid-90s, we started it in 1989. And at one point, it was seven PGA assistant professionals and 24 PGMs running almost 800 kids in 10 weeks of summer camps back in the northern suburbs. It was a massive thing. And but all the while, what really was compelling to me was one time after some mouth surgery that I had to go through, and I was still on the, we'll call it the anesthetics and things like that. And I went out and I played golf, and it was an eerie circumstance that kind of scared me, but also fascinated me, because I went out there and recorded seven birdies, lowest score I ever played on my home golf course. This was soon after college. And it was as if I just saw it and I did it, and there was no interference. And of course, maybe a lot of people might say, well, let's take more of those drugs. I was not built that way, so I didn't do it. But I instead went into the mind and, you know, the powerful neurotransmitting chemicals that we can, that we are producing and using all the time, and that we can access those kinds of things through things we can actually cause to happen or put us close to those states. And, you know, the greatest players in the world talk about the flow state and their best, their greatest moments. And there's so many similarities amongst great athletes under pressure when they perform at their highest levels. And that's what I pursue, is understanding that in the world of science and keeping in touch with some of the greatest researchers in the world. But there's a lot to what went into that back then, but that's a kind of a short synopsis.
So was that the point in time when you started to really feel like, hey, look, this performance, you know, coaching and hypnotherapy and all that sort of thing, that's a real thing. There's probably a gap and a need for that out there for amateurs and pros alike. Was that when you decided, hey, I think I can fill this gap?
Well, I would say to you that I wasn't smart enough to say, let me differentiate in just that area. Instead, I became known as the golf teacher in Chicago of last resort, or the Mayo Clinic of Golf, because people would come to me, a lot of private club members, both young players and adults, and they would sneak out of their golf, their club, get their clubs out of their private club, come book a lesson with me. I was charging back then double of what most head professionals would charge. And they would come to me trying to clandestinely, because I was both coaching the technical aspects, but also really pushing the mental stuff. And I was having uncommonly good results, because for some reason, I had studied how to get the other mind to think with me, which was a whole nother layer of what enabled me to really take on the mind, because it is ultimately the player's willingness and open-mindedness to think out of the box, right? To consider change, to think that, hey, I don't have to just be stuck doing this. And I'm not looking for one answer. I'm looking to learn how to coach myself. And that's what I found a way into. And then over time, really, I saw the results in the players and the coaching I did when I was started asked to be a high school golf coach and all that other stuff. And we had so much success that it dawned on me that, well, it wasn't just the technical aspects of teaching how to grip it, how to swing it. It was that bigger piece, or I shouldn't say bigger. It's commensurate with the rest of it. And that is, you need to learn how to manage your mind and your emotions if you're going to really play this very hard game.
So if you were getting players out of their private clubs to sneak around to come see you, was it word of mouth in that, hey, this guy can help you with your grip and your swing, but he's also going to help you with thinking through things better, thinking differently? Was it the kind of the reputation that you were building for being a mental coach and the improvement that people could see if they started to think differently?
No doubt about it. It was absolutely that. And I was very fortunate. It got recognized by enough people in prominent places. The Chicago District Golf, the CDGA, Chicago District Golfer Magazine, asked me to write a guest article called The Mental Edge. I was always asked to be the MC at the Chicago golf shows. And it was because I really, you know, I felt for players. And I think one thing that's really, really important about this conversation is, from day one when I started teaching golf, I did not believe that you could learn to play really good golf just on the lesson tee. And I thought that instruction needed to go out onto the golf course. And of course, if we look back in time, golf ranges were really an American introduction. That's not how the game was invented. It was learned and played on the golf course, just like you learn to play the piano on a piano. And so playing lessons became my calling card. And so people that came to me for a playing lesson, I told them, I said, look, we'll stay on the range as long as we need to, but only to get you warmed up and understanding. And then let's go find out what you really do. And so that really separated me from, you know, from everybody else, because playing lessons are not done that much, and they certainly weren't done that much 20 years ago.
So yeah, so let's take that a step further, because that's exactly right. I mean, I think certainly nowadays, right? I mean, you go get a lesson and everybody is wanting to see what their numbers are. You know, what it's TrackMan showing, what's my smash factor, what's my spin rate, what's my angle of attack, what, you know, all the data stuff.
Yep.
Not very much going out on the golf course and actually playing the game. So talk about the difference in what you bring versus what we're seeing so prevalent nowadays in golf instruction.
Well, first, I'd like to say that what I've done all my career is encouraged all my peers, competitors, however you want to look at the other guys who were trying to help golfers through lessons and instruction, tried to suggest, hey, they're, you know, go ask them to give you a playing lesson. Every single one of those teachers is very likely got a whole nother aspect of what they can help players do and really diagnose, I'll call it, at a higher level when they're seeing what they actually do on the course. So what I felt was critically important was, let's see what they do under pressure. How do they handle aim? It's one thing to aim on a range where you got the lineup and the bays and you've got the targets right there and there's no consequence. It's another thing, you know, when the fairway is narrow or you have a green that's tucked left, and are they going right for it? Are they playing smart golf? You're learning so much more about who they really are and how they really perform those technical things. And then you have a conversation about, okay, so now what do we do about this? And you're absolutely right. Those TrackMan numbers are fantastic. Are they the same ones though on the range or in the bay compared to on the tee box, or, you know, in a slightly ball above your feet, seven iron? They're definitely not the same.
Let's talk in more depth about hypnotherapy, because I think we're hearing more and more about hypnotherapy, Joe. I had Paul Salter on the show a couple of months ago. He's also a hypnotherapist. But for those of us that are leery of it, don't understand it, talk about what hypnotherapy is and maybe more importantly, what it isn't.
Okay. So the experience that I really have had in my journey towards being able to provide that type of experience for somebody, which is really a conversation or a communication between my mind and, let's say, your mind, or my mind and a player. And it's built around the trust of guiding them both consciously and then subconsciously so that they start to work together. Now, let me back up a second. Have you or anybody listening ever watched a movie at the theater or maybe even in your living room, and you're watching the movie and you start to really connect with the emotional connection with the people on the screen?
Yes, for sure.
I mean, whether you've cried or you've been afraid or whatever, well, that's hypnosis. That's the state of what happens is you already discounted the fact that this is a TV show or a movie that they're all actors. And instead, so that's your conscious mind has decided, I'm not going to believe that anymore. I'm going to set that aside and I'm going to let my subconscious mind really identify with the emotions and the things that are going on here as if it's real. Now, that's not any different than a vivid dream or a daydream. And so what hypnosis really is it's a state of calm trust and absorption into a story. And that story can be of a movie. That story can be just inside of yourself, a great memory that you relive, or it could be a projecting, what I call pre-living, something that's going to happen or could happen in the future. Have you ever been on the putting green and you were telling yourself a story about, okay, this one, and kids, we talk about this all the time. If I knock this in, I beat Scotty Scheffler in the playoff.
Yeah. Right.
But to the extent that you really imagine deeply the scenario, the crowd, that he's there, that your parents are watching, you've got a caddy, the announcer is talking about you. That's a state of mind and a state of being that we go into. So daydreaming, now, hypnotherapy or hypnosis is the same as deep guided meditation as well. It's no different. They're just words that talk about the same thing. And it talks about levels of brain waves and slowing things down and relaxing the body and the mind to such a degree that you can kind of slip into that. We'll call it a semi-dream-like or trance-like state. But it's nothing to be feared. People go into that state when they're driving a car off and where they drive, on a road trip, and then all of a sudden they're at a destination so much faster than they thought. And they've just gotten lost in their thoughts as they're driving.
So tell me about the process of it. I mean, when you start talking about hypnosis, right? We all have the image, right? The swinging watch, and you're watching, yeah. All that kind of stuff that we've seen on TV for all those years. What's the process for getting somebody in the state of mind that they need to be?
So there's a couple of ways, they call them inductions or ways into the state that you're hoping as a somebody like me trying to get somebody there. I found that the most reliable and I think the most authentic one that seems to be most acceptable to people is what's known as Ericksonian, the Ericksonian method. And that's Milton Erickson. He said, look, if you could have a deep conversation with somebody and you can get them to listen intently in a complete way and they trust you, then you can move them into the state. And that has to do with how you pattern and frame the conversation, building language that stimulates imagery and imagination. That starts with ways of relaxing them in a very calm way, slowly through the so-called deep sensory awareness. There's levels of compliance. So if I asked you, and I do a lot of this kind of thing on the phone with my clients, both golfers and athletes, as well as business people and others. But if I just asked you right now to close your eyes and then you did it, then I asked you to take your hands and put them on your lap, one left hand on the left thigh and right hand on the right thigh, and you did it. Then I told you to take a deep breath and then you did it. Well, all of a sudden now you've complied with three things I've asked you to do. And as long as you're willing to go along with that, you're starting to move into that state of calmer compliance and trust. And then as we start to do maybe some deeper breathing and you continue to listen, it starts to flow into a place of peaceful, trustful, quiet. The deeper the player or the person gets relaxed, the more likely we are to bypass the critical thinker in the brain, the conscious brain that's the gatekeeper, and allow that person to relax enough to speak more directly to their deeper conscious and subconscious minds, and then have them go along as if we're talking to that, and that we then invite them to go on a journey with us. And it really is just helping them build their imagination, so much so that, let's say, Chris, you know, your lowest score ever, I don't know what it is, but what is your lowest score you've ever shot?
77.
Perfect. So let's go out to your home course. Let's imagine that we've relaxed you, and now you're at your home course, and you know that you've shot 77, and so therefore you know the holes you have birdied or parred, and the ones that are maybe in the past have been your nemesis, don't know, but let's walk you through shot by shot, hole by hole, having you imagine that today it really does feel pretty easy, that you feel like you're taking your range game to the course and things just have started to line up. You feel good, the timing's there, and you start to feel that rhythm. And then all of a sudden, you find yourself making the turn at a lower nine, perhaps, than ever. And now you start to get onto the back nine. And instead of getting nervous and saying, oh, no, I wonder if I'm going to, you know, I'm going to equal or break my record, you start to realize, gee, I could actually enjoy finding out. And then I play the next hole, and then I hit this shot. And soon, you find you're at the 18th hole, and you imagine what it's going to feel like when you realize, hey, you know, if I make bogey, I shoot 76. Now, the rubber will meet the road, there, because in reality, if that's happening, if you haven't imagined at this level yet, you're naturally going to go back to, I don't feel comfortable there. And now I hope I don't screw up. And then guess what? Yeah. You probably screw up. But if we've reconditioned or preconditioned you through this process of deep visualization or a hypnotic approach, you've already done it. You've already embraced what it might feel like and the different things that could happen. And then when you're actually out there, you're like, hey, it's deja vu. I've been here before. I'm just going to kind of enjoy this and see what happens. And lo and behold, that's how people play better than they've ever played before. And that happens a lot in my world, which is a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's outstanding. I love that. Let's talk a little bit about where we do get mental barriers. You know, we all have typically a hole that always gets us. It could be the par three over water. It could be the one that's got out of bounds down the left. There's any number of things that we get to, you know, whatever that hole is. Here we go. It's, you know, hole number nine. It's that par three. It's got the pond on the left. And yep. I always pull hook it into that pond. How do you get somebody by that so they can break that mental barrier and then go on to play that hole better in the future?
Well, certainly in the past, or if somebody happens to be local, I say, well, let's find a way to go out there directly. Let's just go and experience it. And let's see if we can rebuild some memories. Because a lot of what we are is based on our memories and the emotions attached to those memories that could be set days, weeks, months, or years before. And that's usually what happens when you're talking about those nemesis holes. And some people, of course, they tend to get nervous just in a part of the golf course. I mean, when they get up around the greens, you know, people who really struggle with the short game because they get so nervous about it. They start to precondition themselves based on the past that, oh, I'm just not good at chipping. And you find those people who avoid chipping right around the green, they putt instead. And that's okay. That's another way to solve the problem. But if we're on that hole where you've struggled, let's bring you out there, whether physically or now, go back to what we were just talking about. Let's reconnect with you being there now. And let's talk about the alternatives. What club do you normally hit there? And you tell me what it is. Great. Now, is that really the best club? Is that when you don't quite hit that well, is that going to get you there? Or do we need to consider a different strategy? Maybe we take a different line altogether, but we need to condition you to believe, and you have to ultimately trust and believe that you could find a way to turn that hole into a favorite. Let me give you an example that may resonate with your listeners. Do you have a favorite club in your bag?
Yes.
What is it?
My 8-iron.
Okay. And so why do you think it's your favorite?
I just seem to hit that club consistently well. For whatever reason, I make solid contact with that club every time.
Okay. Now, which club would you say is the one that's kind of like you got the hate relationship with?
My 5-iron.
Okay. So now, years ago, back in Chicago, I had a guy and he really loved his pitching wedge, but he was really not fond of a lot of the other golf clubs. And so we set up a strategy of having him go on the golf course and just pitch, use his pitching wedge all the way down the field, hole after hole for a while, until he really felt like, okay, this is a pitching wedge swing and I could imagine myself on the tee with a pitching wedge. Well, then we said, all right, now make a pitch off the first tee, hit that ball, and if you liked it, great. Now let's make the same swing, but let's exchange it for a different wedge called a one wedge or a driver wedge. And let's make the same swing feeling, even though it's a longer club, and just pitch it. And this guy, that clicked with him. And that he said, I'm just pitching the ball around the golf course. I just grab these, I call them all wedges. A 5-iron is a 5-wedge. The 8-iron is an 8-wedge. And the pitching wedge is a pitching wedge. They all have a sole and then a face. And if you look down there, they meet together. And that leading edge is a wedge. And we hope to get that right there in that crevice between the ball and the grass or the turf. If we can do that, we have a relatively good chance of solid contact. So anyway.
Yeah.
So that's a way of getting you to imagine hitting really good shots is a fun thing that I get people to do so vividly in different ways. In daily mental workouts is an example, which is an interesting concept in and of itself, of having them start to play their home course shot by shot, hole by hole in their mind as vividly as they can. And this, they can do this on their own. And I help them to build those processes. And then they can play. You could play your golf course. So I'm going to make a challenge to you, Chris. I want you to take your home course where you shot the 77, hopefully. And I want you to start to imagine shooting a 76, 75, 74, and maybe even an even par round. And come up with the different ways you can do it. And every day, set aside 5 or 10 minutes and just imagine going through each hole and shooting that score and what it's going to feel like. And maybe you bogey the last hole. Maybe you birdie the last hole. It doesn't matter. But change it up every single day and try that for a month. And then let's find out how close you came to either shooting 77 again or, you know,
yeah,
maybe you'll go lower.
This is fantastic stuff, Joe. You're awesome. One more before I let you go. You've got a new training app that you're getting ready to launch. It's got some reference back to the book that you wrote a while back called Real Golf. Talk about the app and its connection to the book that you wrote and when we're going to be able to start using it.
Okay. Well, I'm happy to say that the app is out in the Apple Store now. It's called Real Mental Golf. And it is downloadable with some free content to check it out. And within there, it gives lots of background on my bio and things and what the app really is there to do. What I really decided was, I know that the mental game, the mental emotional game, should be a part of a person's overall approach to learning and getting better. It doesn't replace good instruction. It complements it and it amplifies it. And it makes it easier actually to digest. And so I thought, boy, you know, another book might make sense. But these days, people are referring to their phones, their tablets all the time, their iPads and things. And I wanted to have something that could be essentially take the best in mental coaching from all the greats, past and present, Dr. Bob Rotella and everybody else in between, those in the research areas like Dr. Robert Bjork and C.N. Bielak, who used to run the Human Performance Lab at Chicago, and so many other resources, going back to one of the fathers of kind of mental performance, Maxwell Maltz, who was a plastic surgeon who started the whole phenomena called psychocybernetics back in the late 50s, early 60s. And it, I said, you know, if since I've done this for so long, how can I give something out there that anybody could use, a parent who wants their child to have a better a backdrop and a way forward in terms of competing at junior golf and all the different levels. High school players who tear their hair out and really shape their self-image about their self-worth. Unfortunately, it happens because they're so competitively wanting to see if they can make the high school team, and college players as well. So I thought, how about a mental coach in your pocket? And that led me to the development of this app. And it's been a labor for over a year now, and we finally got it out there. People are using it. I've got a small growing community of people who are, some are playing right now in one of the state junior tournaments here in South Carolina. I've got a girl who's in the thick of it at a big tournament in Tennessee. And this thing is exciting for me because I get to put stuff into it on a daily basis and know that it can prompt people, and then they can access me and my voice, because I've got a lot of my recorded scripts, you know, I call them those hypnotherapy scripts, but also guided imagery, and then research. And then it's like you could pick up almost any book in the world of sports psychology or mental performance, not only golf, but other sports too, and say, wow, here's a resource that very simply in small bites can help me organize how I'm going to approach playing better this week, weekend, or next month. So it's really fun for me right now.
I can't wait to get my hands on it. I promise you that. Before I let you go, Joe, and we were talking before the show went live, but you were telling me a story. You know, Mark Calcavecchi is going to join me next.
Yes.
But you've got some potential connection to Mark. Talk about what that was.
I was referred to a gentleman named Brian Gamache, who ran WMS Industries, the old Williams Gaming Company that has been one of the leaders in building all those slot machines in all the casinos around the world. Anyway, he came to me and for himself and one of his young sons, and we started to get to know each other. And he had told me he played college golf, I think, back at Florida. And then he mentioned Mark Calcavecchia's name. So I don't know for sure. I haven't been in touch with Mark for a few years since I moved away from Chicago. Brian, but I think they know each other. And I would be wondering if Mark Calcavecchia remembers Brian Gamache. Great guy.
I will certainly ask him. Joe, before I let you go, let our listeners know, how can they stay up to date with all the great things you're doing besides your app? How can they see you online and on social media?
So I am, I've got Joe Bosco, just simply Joe Bosco on Facebook. I'm on Joe Bosco Coach on Instagram. My email is joebosco@gmail.com. And I always tell people the best way to get a hold of me is to text me. So I don't know if you want to put my phone number out there or not, but
that's up to you.
Sure. Yeah. People can text me 847-826-0045. They can shoot me a text and say, hey, I heard you on Chris's show. And, this is what's going on. I work with people all around the country. I've got some tour players who are in the Korn Ferry Tour world right now. And some of the people I've never met before, so I can do remote coaching. And of course, in combination or in synergy with the app, it allows me to, I think now it's going to allow me to provide a really cool opportunity for a lot of people to take the mental game and put it where it belongs. You work on your you work on your swing every day. You might as well work on your mind too, because you're going to do that whether you know it or not.
Joe, I got to say, Jeff Smith was right on. You're fantastic, my friend, and I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your busy schedule to come and be a part of the show. I hope this is the first of many visits we get to have with you.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it. Chris, God bless. I'm out, and privately, I'm out to help you break 77.
Well, let's make that happen, my friend. I look forward to the journey on that.
Thanks.
Joe, take care. All the best to you and your family. We'll catch up soon.
Sounds good. Bye-bye.
See you, Joe. Folks, that is the great Joe Bosco. How awesome is that guy? I mean, my goodness. I learned so much. And look, we just barely scraped the tip of the iceberg with Joe. So many other things I wanted to get into with him. But the conversation was so enthralling, and he is so engaging that we got through a little bit of it. But I'll tell you, I'm going to download that app when this show is over. And I'll be an avid user of that. And like I say, I hope this was the first of many visits that we get to have with Joe, because I think he's going to help all of us break whatever goal we have out there. You know, if you're trying to break 100 for the first time, 90, 80, for me, 77. But I think he is the guy that's going to get us there. So I'm very excited about what he has to offer, and I look forward to getting him back on the show again very soon. Coming up next is a 1989 Champion Golfer of the Year and one of my favorite people on the planet, and that is Mark Calcavecchia. Before I bring Mark into the show, I want to remind you about our wonderful friends over at On Point Golf and their out-of-this-world On Point Golf Ball Marker. And if you don't have one, folks, you really need to go check it out at onpointgolf.us. Get the number one ball marker in the game of golf. On Point is the only three-dimensional ball marker out there. With alignment technology and a removable coin that is approved to use according to the rules of golf. As you know, putting is all about line and pace. Mark your ball with On Point, engage with your three-dimensional ball marker, and have more confidence in your line, execute the putt, and you're going to lower your scores. Do what the likes of Jim Furyk, PGA professionals, and amateurs alike are doing now. They use the number one ball marker in golf and they lower their scores. You know Ken Duke and Thongchai JD. They won for the first time on the PGA Tour in 2023 and they were using an On Point ball marker. Get yours at onpointgolf.us and make more putts. And oh, by the way, you can also customize the removable coin for any club, event, or corporate outing. They make really great tee gifts and custom products. That's also going to help lower your score. I use On Point ball markers. Mine is black and gold, 3D black golf ball with a gold line down the middle to help me line up my putts. It's like having a 15th club in my bag. It's helped my game. Why wouldn't you let it help yours? Again, onpointgolf.us. See what I'm talking about. Order yours today. All right, now back and next on the tee with me is a guy who's just become a tremendous friend over the years. I have so much respect and appreciation for Mark Calcavecchia. As you guys know, he's the 89 Open champion. You remember, as Joe mentioned just in the last segment, guy played his college golf at the University of Florida from 1978 to 1980, all SEC in 1979, got his first win on tour in 1986 at the Southwest Golf Classic. He has one of the lowest scoring rounds in PGA Tour history. He finished 28 under at the 2001 Waste Management Open, shot a second round 60 that week. At the 2009 Canadian Open, he set a record by making 9 consecutive birdies during his second round. In all, Mark won 13 times out on the PGA Tour, 4 more times out on the Champions Tour. Over the course of his career, 193 top 10 finishes, 351 top 25s. He is a fantastic follow on Twitter at Mark Calc, and I couldn't be more excited. He is back with me again this week here on Next on the Tee. Hey, Mark, how are you, my friend?
Hey, Chris. Good. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Hey, I don't know if you caught the end of the last segment with Joe Bosco. Brian Gamache, do you know him?
I sure do. I remember him very well. I haven't seen him for a long time, but when I first met him at Florida in the late 70s, he was roommates with one of my friends that I talk to a lot these days. His name is Kirk Harris, and they were roommates. And, of course, I met him at the golf course. And, yeah, he was a great player and a super nice guy. I remember him very well.
Ah, there you go. Hey, and oh, by the way, happy belated birthday, my friend. A couple of weeks ago turned a milestone year. Congratulations.
Yeah, the big 6'5". So, you know, I got on, Brenda got one of these scales that kind of tells you your BMI and your bone index and all this other useless information. the scale told me I was 73.
Oh, so. throw that scale out. You don't need that.
It seems to weigh me less though. So it's got its positive.
And speaking of Brenda, she came back for your birthday. She was over on vacation in Italy. Boy, that's true love, my friend.
Well, yeah, it was kind of a weird situation. We decided to do a boys trip over in Scotland. This was our 20-year anniversary this year in May, and we were, you know, kind of thinking we were going to go to Italy together. And then the next thing you know, this boys trip to Scotland happened. And she's like, well, screw you. I'm taking a girls trip to Italy. So, yeah. 2 days after I got home from Scotland, she took off with our daughter and 3 other friends, and they had a great week in Italy. So I kind of owe her one for that. Yeah. But yeah, she got home. on my birthday. So it was good. It was good timing.
Speaking of celebrations, I read an article that not all that long ago for your Christmas card that you and Brenda sent out, you used a picture of a streaker at the Open as the card. Is that accurate?
That's 100% accurate. I think the card said, it was a streaker at Liverpool. And I think Peter Jacobson tackled him. And it said, what did it say? Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. So, yeah, that was our Christmas card. So that, of course, leave it to Brenda to come up with that.
That's fantastic. Mark, going back in your career, I want to talk about your relationship with J.C. Snead. I read an article that said he taught you how to play tour golf. There was a particular story about him, let's say, strongly expressing his thought about where you were walking to mark your ball through his through line, which is a term I had never heard of until I read that article. Talk about J.C. Snead and what the through line is.
Yeah, I think it was 1982. I'm 22, and this is, nobody really knew what a through line, well, at least I didn't, was back then. I'll never forget it. It was on the 16th hole at Enjoy Country Club, which is where the Champions Tour is playing this week. And I went to tap in. He had like a 4-footer, and I went to tap, I missed my putt. I went to tap it in, and my feet were right behind the hole, where if he missed the putt, his ball would have been right where my feet were. So he, maybe not at the time so politely, pulled me over, but he said, "You just stepped in my line." I said, what are you talking about? I just went and tapped in. I didn't know. And he goes, if I would have missed that 4-footer, my 18-incher coming back would have been right where your big old feet were. And that's called the through line. And he taught me that right then and there. And I had no idea, you know, in junior golf and college golf and stuff back in the late 70s and whatnot, that wasn't a thing. And he taught me that in 1982. And, today you'll see it all the time. Guys will go to look like they're going to tap in or should tap in, but, you know, they don't want to step. If the other player has a putt from the opposite side of the hole, you know, you don't want to stand there and put your big old feet there in case he misses it, and have him putt through. Well, back then it was spikes, right? We hit, there wasn't such a thing as soft spikes,
right?
So it could have been an issue. And JC taught me that. He actually taught me a lot. He was a little bit misunderstood as kind of a tough guy or a rough guy to play with. I thought he was one of the nicest, funniest guys I've ever played with, and he taught me a lot. As did Hubert Green, also had kind of the same reputation. And I miss those guys.
I also read that one year at the Disney Classic, you were in not such a happy mood, maybe after making a double, and you walked up to an elevated tee, went to grab yourself a paper cup, get a drink of water out of the cooler. Instead of getting one cup, you got like 10. And then you gave the cooler a quick little kick, and it went tumbling down the cart path right towards your mom. You remember that?
Of course I do. That was at Lake Buena Vista. Couldn't tell you the hole. It was somewhere in the back nine. She was out there and watching. And this is also probably in the early to middle 80s. And I was not happy. The water cooler had issues. And I'm not so sure I tried to really kick it down the hill, but I gave it a boot, and it went tumbling down the little hill towards the car path where she was standing. And then of course I got yelled at for that by not only several other people. You're bringing up some good old memories here. Of course I remember them. I've mellowed greatly since then. I had some issues back when I was a kid. I will not deny that.
In 2000 at the Open, when it was played at St. Andrews, you and Tiger stayed at the Old Course Hotel. You played a couple of practice rounds together, starting really early in the morning. The second fairway is right outside the back door of the hotel, and you guys started out there on the second fairway. I read that you said that if you gave him a par on the first hole, over the next 34 holes, he shot 17 under for the 2 days. What was it like watching him go through his business and play like that?
He did. We actually started on two fairway, and we didn't play one or 18 either day. So we played 32 practice holes, and he was actually 18 under. And if there was ever a tournament that was over before it started, that was it. There's a video of me standing there with next to Tiger in the range with Butch Harmon, and I was just standing there watching Tiger hit balls with my mouth open, and I just played 32 practice holes with him, and it was spectacular. I honestly think that week, Tiger played as safe as he could. He never hit a bunker the whole week and shot 18 under, which at that time was a record. He could have shot 30 under because the weather was perfect all week. If he would have played aggressively or like he played in the practice rounds, he'd have been 30 under and won that tournament by 15 or 20 shots. It was the best I've ever seen anybody hit the golf ball. Every iron shot was dead at the flag, dead solid. And it's hard to catch a solid off of that turf over there all the time. It's tight, it's dry, it's short. It's like hitting off of dirt or mud, but it was spectacular. That's a week I'll never forget.
You've played rounds of golf with arguably the two greatest players to ever live in Jack Nicklaus and Tiger. When you watch them play, when you have an opportunity to go out and play practice rounds like you did there with Tiger, is there anything that you can glean from what you're seeing? Or is their game and their swing so different? If you start to try to be them, you stop being you.
That's a good question. I was lucky to play a lot with Jack in my early days. Jack Nicklaus was my idol, still is my idol, always was, always has been. The way he treated me when I first met him, when I got down to North Palm Beach, Florida in 1973. I played a lot of golf with Jackie Jr. and even Gary for that matter, a little bit with Stevie, but what I took out of that was Jack gave me the ultimate compliment. And I think it was 1986, I Monday qualified for Doral and shot 65 and I somehow somebody WD'd. I'm not sure of the story, but anyway, I played with Jack the first two rounds and I shot 65. Maybe it was the next year when I was exempt. And Jack Nicklaus said, Mark Calcafecchia plays a game in which I'm not familiar with. And that was like the year after he won the Masters. So for him to say that was a huge confidence boost for me. And then, of course, playing all those rounds with Tiger and practicing with Tiger when I worked with Butch Harmon. Was a total learning experience. And, I got to see firsthand right off the bat around the late 90s, early 2000s, what Tiger Woods was all about. And obviously, what he did or what he has done in the game is just incredible.
Mark, you won the Argentine Open twice, back in 1993, again in 95. Both times it was played at the Jockey Club. It was a pretty popular tournament for the guys to go down and play. It was a part of the European Tour, I believe, at the time.
It was,
Craig Stadler, Jim Furyk, Marco Mira, Jadon Blake, all won down there. Vicente Fernandez and Roberto DiVincenzo. Those guys dominated. They won 7 and 9 times, respectively. But it's a tournament that dates all the way back to 1905. It's on the Corn Ferry Tour nowadays. Talk about going down there and playing in that golf tournament and coming away a winner both times.
Here's a great story about that tournament. And I'm not sure if it was 95 or 97, but Saturday night it rained about a foot. The course was literally underwater. And Angel Cabrera and Eduardo Romero were one shot behind me going into Sunday. I mean, the course was unplayable. But of course, they wanted one of those two guys to win. So we played lift, clean, and tee.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Probably the only time in the history of golf you could put it on a tee anywhere, in a bunker, in the rough, in the middle of the fairway. If you're standing in 2 inches of water, you just teed it up and swept it off the tee. And I went, I think I shot 64 that day and ended up winning by six. So I kind of put the kibosh on their theory there. But yeah, we lift clean and tee through the course.
Wow.
Pretty funny. Another thing I remember is we're on 17, one of the 2 years, and there is just lightning and thunder everywhere. And Eduardo Romero says to me, "Oh, don't worry. Lightning never hits the ground here in Argentina." I'm like, I'm running for the club. I don't care. I'm running for the clubhouse. And they were going to keep playing. The lightning
wow.
all around us. He says, "No, lightning never hits the ground in Argentina." And I'm like, well, all right. Good luck with that. but I love Buenos Aires. Argentina is amazing. The food. I mean, if you're hungry early, you're kind of screwed because the restaurants don't open till 10:30. So everybody eats there at midnight.
Wow, right? Really?
Or 1 o'clock. Yeah. Amazing beef and food there, but everybody eats at midnight or 1 o'clock, stays out all night. And then, you know, if we played in the morning, you get back to the hotel at 1 or 2 in the afternoon, and it's like a ghost town. Everybody's sleeping. It's probably one of the coolest countries I've ever been in.
No doubt. I love that. couple more before I let you go, Mark, as we look at a couple of weeks to the Open at Royal Portrush. It's only been played there a couple of times,
right? Going
back to 1951 when Max Faulkner of Great Britain won. And then a few years ago when Shane Lowry got the home victory. Have you ever played Royal Portrush?
I played it one time, in 1991, and I loved it. It's a great golf course, and I watched every shot that week when Shane won. I know the holes. Matter of fact, just today, for some unknown reason, I checked the weather forecast, and it looks like it could be pretty rainy next week there. So it should be interesting, but it's an amazing golf course. I was going to go the year Shane won, and something unknown happened. I was hurt, or, you know, as usual. But anyway, it was, it's a fantastic golf course, and I really look forward to watching it.
When I had Gary Player on the show, a couple of months ago, we were talking about Jack Nicklaus always used to say that, the majors were some of the easier tournaments to win because there was only a handful of guys out there that thought they were capable of winning a
right.
major. Gary agreed with that. Did you see that during the course of your career? Did the field actually narrow because there were only so many guys that could handle the pressure of trying to win a major coming down the stretch on Sunday?
I do kind of agree with that. But then when you think over the years of all the guys that had a chance to win a major, you would have thought that some of them wouldn't have thought that, like Mike Donald when he lost to Hale Irwin. Or Brian Watts when he lost to in the playoff at O'Meara at Birkdale. I think it was O'Meara. So they were, I mean, there's a lot of guys that you wouldn't think would think they could win a major. But, you know, we're all professional golfers. And when you're playing good, you're playing good. And you know, that's kind of the great underdog story. But, you know, to Jack's point, you know, the way he played in majors, you know, he tried to hit it in the middle of the green, and he figured one of every 4 or 5 30 footers he was going to make and just par the rest of the holes and let everybody else screw up. And I'm not saying that was kind of Tiger strategy, but I think it kind of was. You know, he just took his birdies when he got them, as he would say, took what the golf course gave him, and shot even 1 under, 2 under, and that's fantastic in majors. You know, hit as many fairways as you can, and I think there's a definite point to that, and I think that's what worked great for Jack, and I think that's what worked great for Tiger as well.
You recently tweeted out that All in the Family and Green Acres are two of the most underrated shows of all time. And I couldn't agree more with that. But why do you feel that way?
Right. Oh, man. Whenever I scroll across and the Andy Griffith Show, you know, with Barney and some of these shows, you come across them, you just got to watch them. You know, Archie Bunker, I mean, what he got away with back then would never fly today, but it was so funny. Green Acres was a classic, with Mr. Haney and, I don't know, just classic characters. And those shows are still fun to watch, you know, 50, 60 years later.
Indeed they are. So what's on your calendar for the rest of 25, Mark?
You know, actually I was kind of planning on playing the Dick's Open this week in Endicott and Enjoy, where I mentioned where I had my thing with J.C. Sneed. But I drove the bus up to Maine 3 weeks ago to the Drive for Kids celebrity event to watch my buddy Ronnie Russell play, which I think Marty Fish won again. And we played three rounds of golf, had a great time, and then I was going to play in the Pro-Am. And on the sixth hole the day before I was supposed to play in the Pro-Am, I climbed out of a bunker, and my left Achilles was kind of tight, and my left calf popped.
Oh!
Oh, yeah. I thought somebody shot me in the calf. I mean, I don't know what it feels like to get shot in the calf, but it felt like that, and I was done. I couldn't even walk after that, so I couldn't play in the Pro-Am. Drove home. I actually went to the doctor 2 weeks ago. It was a muscle pull, but he thinks my Achilles fine, so I've just been kind of resting that, and actually played golf yesterday for the first time in 3 weeks, and it felt okay. It still hurts to walk uphill, so just another injury in you know, in the life and times of Mark Calcavecchia, but it's okay. I'm used to it. I actually played really good yesterday, so I'm happy about that, and hopefully play somewhere down the road. But I'm kind of done with it. I'm 65 now, you know, not hitting it too far, you know, which is hard when you're giving up a lot of yardage off the tee, even on the Champions Tour. But, you know, I still watch golf every week on TV and love it and follow all my friends out there.
Mark, before I let you go, remind our listeners again, how can they stay up to date with the great things that you're out there doing and follow you, whether it's on Twitter, on Instagram, anywhere on social media?
Twitter /X, I'm at Mark Calc, and follow Brenda as well. She's at Brenda Calc. I don't even know what my Instagram deal is, but you can hunt me down.
Mark, you're fantastic, my friend. I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your night to come back and be a part of the show. It's always a privilege to get to spend some time with you. It's so much fun. I hope we get the opportunity to catch up with you a little bit later on in the year.
Absolutely, Chris. You're the best. I love listening to your show and your guest. Joe was awesome. And yeah, it was pretty cool. A name from the past, Brian Gamache. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah. Take care, Mark. All the best to you and Brenda. I look forward to catching up with you again soon.
All right, buddy. You got it.
See you, Mark.
See you, Chris.
That is the great Mark Calcavecchia, folks. There isn't two better people to follow on social media than Mark and Brenda Calcavecchia, at Mark Calc, at Brenda Calc. Mark has got so many great stories, and he has experienced so many wonderful things out there, whether it's in golf or in life. I treasure every moment that I get to speak with him. I always smile. I always laugh. And it's just such a treat to listen to Mark share the stories from his past. And, you know, look, he's still out there every once in a while playing out on the Champions Tour, which, you know, look, part of going out on the Champions Tour and watching those guys play, A, they're all fantastic players. So you get to see great golf, and you get to see it way more up close than you would of any other tour out there. So you're going to get to see these guys up close and personal and get to interact with them, which is, to me, when you get to interact with your heroes, there's just nothing better than that. So, and Mark is out there playing, and hopefully he gets out there and plays some more tournaments this year and goes into next. But on top of that, Mark is just one of the great people you get to meet in this life. I mean, you want to talk about a guy who has achieved a lot. You don't win an Open Championship. You don't win 13 times on the PGA Tour and four more times out on the Champions Tour without being one of the 1% of the 1% great players that have ever played this game. And then to get to hear the stories and get to interact with them, it's just one of the great things that I get to do as part of the show that means the world to me. So Mark and Brendan mean the world to me, and I can't thank them enough. Hopefully, like I say, we get back, get Mark back on the show a little bit later on in the year. All right, my friends, it is time for me to put a bow on part one of this week's show. My sincere thanks to Joe Bosco and Mark Kalkavecchia for joining me. Now, folks, two great guys, so many great stories and insights. I hope you enjoyed it. I loved what Joe had to say and learning a little bit more about hypnotherapy. Can't wait to give it a try, oh, by the way. And his offer is fantastic, so I will definitely be doing that. And how great is Mark Kalkavecchia? Just one of the great people you get to meet in this life. So many great stories, so many great insights, and just a wonderful human being. I love Mark and Brenda a lot. So thanks to both of those guys. Now come back for part two, because you're also going to love Marcy Komoda. Marcy and what they are doing over at Proto Concept Golf is really amazing. You're going to love hearing about the technology and all of the great products that they have, their line of golf clubs, and plus his time in the game as well. He's done a lot. He's been over with Ping and now doing some great things at Proto Concept 14 Golf prior to that. So I think you're going to learn a lot and really enjoy Marcy as well. But folks, I can't thank you enough for making Next on the Tee, continually making us a part of your golf content. You guys are just fantastic. The greatest supporters in the history of podcasts. I appreciate each and every one of you so very much. Until next time, hit them straight, my friends.
Thanks for joining Chris again this week on Next on the Tee. We hope you enjoyed the conversations as much as we did. Please share the show with your golf buddies and be sure to follow it on Trib Live or your favorite podcast app so you never miss an episode. Thanks for pressing play and being part of the journey. We'll see you next week, right here, where the best minds in golf share their stories.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.